welcome again to Air Olympia. Anarchist news and analysis from Olympia, Washington, Cascadia. On today's show, we're going to be talking about Barack Obama's bloody Afghanistan offensive and why ending war worldwide is the only solution for the economic crisis that we see manifest in such societal problems like the state of health care and higher education. We're also going to be talking about the Olympia City Comprehensive Plan and the new attitude that local businesses are taking toward homeless culture. So stick around. This is Air Olympia. If you would like to be involved in Air Olympia, then that would be completely awesome. And you can help us, you know, bring all of the things to light that we need to know so that we can figure out how to live in a harmonious way with Mother Earth and ourselves. If you would like to help us do that, then you should write airolympia@riseup.net. And thanks for listening. Okay, so the Olympia City Comprehensive Plan is an awesome little bit of, you know, it's an awesome little agenda that they have compiled. It consists of a lot of things, a lot of ideas and programs, which no doubt come from a place of concern and invested interest in keeping Olympia a viable, sustainable, and productive place to live. And that is completely, I don't think that anyone can argue with that. People who made the Olympia Comprehensive Plan, the you know, it's a whole lot of different people involved. We're not going to say any of their names, but the people who composed it, and you know, it is a living document, who continue to compose it. It's a living agenda. You know, I don't know that it's been composed into one document, but the people who continue to contribute to it no doubt do this with the idea that the way that they are contributing to it and the sentiments that they are putting forth into action are going to lead themselves and the people that they care about, you know, further towards some type of creative, viable, and you know, virile state, you know, a sustainable, you know, state of being. They think that they're going to get all their needs met. The Comprehensive Plan. They have the best interests at heart, you know, of at least themselves and their families. And the thing that you have to ask, though, is, you know, you have to look at words like vibrant. The word vibrant basically means alive. It means good, alive, and, you know, it's that, like, you know, energetic, right? Colorful. And sustainable, productive, friendly, safe. Words like this, these are great words. They're like good, awesome. These are also very subjective words, meaning that what you ask one person what they mean by inviting and comfortable and pleasant, you know, might be completely different than what another person thinks of as inviting, comfortable, and pleasant, you know. And if you look at the Olympia Comprehensive Plan and you ask people in different associations who are involved in it what they want to do for Olympia over the next year, they'll say, well, we want to make it a more more pleasant place. Independent businesses and people who want to contribute to independent businesses to be able to come and spend money and contribute to our vibrant economy. And so we want to make it pleasant and comfortable and friendly. Well, that's cool, but what's pleasant and comfortable and friendly to a crow isn't going to be pleasant and comfortable and friendly to a worm or something. There's like different people have different definitions of that. And so what you have to do when you want to get to the bottom of this and you want to figure out what they're planning to do with all of these fancy, nice, pleasant words, you have to look at the various aspects of legislation that are being passed, beneath all this. What are the words pleasant and whatever describing, And one of the biggest changes that and most controversial items of the comprehensive plan are is the issue of rezoning the isthmus. In 2009, a decision was made to rezone the downtown isthmus, the narrow strip of land connecting downtown to the west side, overlooking the Capitol. They're going to rezone that to a 60. They rezoned it to a 60 and 90-foot height limit so that Triways could come in and build the Lurita Passage. Because if you want a vibrant, independent, good economy that makes a lot of money, that's going to draw people from all over to contribute to it and whatever, then you're going to have to build something downtown and walking distance to everything, but that rich people are going to want to live in so that they can live there and run their business downtown and whatever. And so you build the Lurita Passage, and the Lurita Passage is a big skyscraper style $1 million condominium overlooking Capitol Lake, and across the street from the Capitol, or across the way from the Capitol, overlooking Capitol Lake. And this rezoning of the isthmus so that Triways could come in and build this met with a whole lot of opposition in town. People in town did not like the idea of this. City council said whatever, passed it anyway. And then they decided to repeal that, and the new city council voted to restore the 35-foot height limit on the isthmus so that Triway couldn't come in and build the Lurita Passage. But representatives from Triway say that, no, that doesn't matter. We're going to build the Lurita Passage anyway. All of this comes from articles written by Matt Batchelor of The Olympian. If you want to check the sources on this, all of this comes from The Olympian. So just go check that. And the Triway people said, no, we're going to build it anyway. And then certain people from the community said that if they try to build it anyway, then they're going to take them to court, because what Triways is saying is that they got the approval to build it before the height limit was repealed. And so what? And so the new decision doesn't make a difference, because they got the permission to build it on, with the old decision having been made. And so it's the thing's going to go to a court date. But you've got to think, this seems to be, city council and a corporation arguing things out. There's got to be a higher court that we take this to. There's got to be somebody ahead of them who can make a bigger decision, and that would be the state. When you can't decide things in a local city level and with the city legislation, then you go to state legislation. And that is just what happened back in February. And this is an article published by Brad Shannon and Jordan Schrader, staff writers of The Olympian, published February 17th, 2010. Deadline sinks isthmus bill. There was a last-minute flurry of activity on the Senate and House floors as policy proposal limit passes. A bill slapping a 35-foot height limit on the isthmus between Bud Inlet and Capitol Inlet died Tuesday in the legislature. If the state would have said that, 35-foot height limit on the isthmus, then Triways wouldn't have been able to say anything because that would override city council. But the bill died in legislature, and both measure helping Lacey and its fire district sort out annexation. We won't get into that, but House Bill 2082 and Senate Bill 5800 would have created a height district on portions of the isthmus, which became a battleground issue in November's Olympia City Council races after the council approved 65 and 90 foot limits to accommodate triways. Two city council incumbents lost their seats. Senator Karen Frazier, Democrat from Thurston County, said she was waiting for the House to approve its measure, but approval never came, despite Democratic Representative Sam Hunt's efforts. Last year, it passed the Senate three times. It was the House's turn, Frazier said, saying she had expected the House to move it first this time. Hunt could not be reached to comment on why the bill died. But his seatmate, Olympia Representative Brendan Williams, said recently that he thought it was up to the Senate to send the bill over one more time. So the bill to, go ahead and stick a 35-foot height limit on the isthmus died. And so now it's going to be left up to people in the city to do something about it. It's either going to be city council. They say that there's a 35-foot height limit on it. They stuck to that. Triways is going to come in, and they're going to say, oh, it doesn't matter because y'all already said 60 and 90 foot, blah, 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 according to what one of their PR people said a few months ago. And so this is going to go to a lawsuit or something. But, I saw a video called Watch that was about tree sitters who call themselves the Cascadia Defense Network. And they stopped Plum Creek from cutting down old growth forests in northern Washington. And so if they can tree sit in the woods and be fine and take care of one another, then I don't see why we can't tree sit those trees that are sitting out in front of that land where they're talking about building the Lurita Passage at. Because we can't have them building this. This is absolutely ridiculous, It's crazy. We need to be concerned about other things besides trying to bring a vibrant economy to Olympia, besides trying to bring in people who are going to want to spend money on this and that, because everybody knows that capitalism is the reason that we have all these societal problems to begin with. And so what we really need to do is bring the Cascadia Defense Network to Olympia and tree sit those trees outside of where they're talking about building Lurita Passage. But that is a resort. First resort is that we support whatever institutions come to oppose Triways about building this thing. And we look up Triways, look up Lurita Passage, see how they have all these websites where they're trying to sell it to like the rich, industrious people who would want to move into it, and see what you can do to support whatever commissions would be trying to keep Triways out of here. And one thing that you can do before all that you can do this Tuesday at 7 p.m. is you can go to the Olympia City Council meeting. City Council meets every Tuesday at 7 p.m. in the council chambers at 900 Plum Street Southeast, unless otherwise noted. The council chamber doors are usually open 1/2 hour before the start of the meeting. Anyone is welcome to attend a city council meeting unless it is a closed meeting as allowed by state law. And what you have to do is you have to show up 30 minutes prior to this and write your name on a little piece of paper. And they will take that piece of paper, and then when it comes time for them to ask people in the audience questions, they will ask you a question, and you can ask them what's up with the Lurita Passage, what's up with the comprehensive plan, why City Hall, the new City Hall that is probably going to be there until the year 2050 at least, has half as many female shower facilities as it does male, for police officers. Do they think that it's just a good idea to have half as many female police officers as male police officers in a town? Or is that just a coincidence or something? Ask them all these different things this Tuesday at the City Council Chambers at 900 Plum Street Southeast. Show up at 6:30 Tuesday, 7 p.m. And not everything in the world is crazy and, you know, to be suspicious of. Music is awesome, and this is probably my favorite song off of the Evergreen Student compilation from this past year. This song is by Pan Dementia, and it's called Silicone. Dementia off of My Little Dewey Duds, the 2009 Evergreen Student CD. Pan Dementia, Silicone, that was a pretty cool song. And I'm going to go ahead and say, you know, I retract my statement that I made before we played that song. Happy Equinox, everyone. You know, it is Equinox, but there's serious things in the world. Now, I retract my statement that I made before we played that song where I said that you should support anyone who tries to keep, who is doing a lawsuit to try to keep Triways out. That's not true. For the simple reason that you should never support anyone who tries to do something just because they try to do it. You know, I mean, you should never like stand by a cause at all costs. You should always investigate, you know, whatever's going on. And so that, with that being said, I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna say that everyone should come to Media Island and go in our video library and check out the movie Watch, and they should learn about the Cascadia Defense Network and how they kept Plum Creek Logging Company out of the old growth forests up in northern Washington, or some of them. And, you know, we should tree sit around the Lurita Passage if they try to build it. We should go ahead and just plan on having a tree sit in downtown. We'll plant a tree. We'll bring a tree there and sit in it if need be. But another thing that is in that the comprehensive plan entails is making Olympia feel safer and more inviting and a more comfortable place for local businesses, you know, for people who would want to spend money to come and spend money. And this is evident by this conference that is going to be happening March 24th at the Heritage Bank Annex, 201 Fifth Avenue Southwest, the corner of Fifth Avenue and Water Street in downtown Olympia at 8 a.m. That's pretty early, but it's Friday, March 26th, 8 a.m. Heritage Bank Annex, corner of Fifth Avenue and Water Street, downtown Olympia. And this conference is open to all people who are involved in local businesses. That's what it says. And let's see. How to talk to people on the street. Come learn constructive ways to engage with people on the street. How to deal with antisocial behaviors and how to make our downtown a safe and comfortable place to be. Presenters are Sergeant John Huckins, the Olympia Police Department Training Officer. Nicole Ketcherside, Community Youth Services Outreach Worker. Nicole's a good friend of KOWA. Tim Langland, Olympia Union Gospel Mission. Rosalind and Noriega, Partners in Prevention Education. This could be a good thing or it could be a bad thing. It has been described to me as a conference at which they will be, quote-unquote, teaching local business owners how to deal with the homeless as if they were how to treat the homeless like real people. And the fact that, the training officer of the OPD is going to be one of the presenters of this makes me a little suspicious. But I'm not going to judge a book by its cover, you know. I'm going to go March 26th, 8 a.m., to the Heritage Bank Annex, 201 Fifth Avenue Southwest, at the corner of Fifth Avenue and Water Street in downtown Olympia. And I'm going to see what sort of constructive ways they are teaching the local business owners to use to deal with antisocial behaviors and how they are planning to make downtown Olympia, our downtown Olympia, a safe and comfortable place. You know, because I know that words have different meanings when they're used by different people. Meaning that what Triways thinks is safe and comfortable, the salmon in the river might not be safe and comfortable. You know? What corporations in general and business-minded people think is safe and comfortable, the average person and the environment doesn't normally consider too safe and comfortable. So with that in mind, everyone, try to keep yourself educated about what local business owners in Olympia think is safe and comfortable and how they are going to be trying to extend their idea of safe and comfortable to the homeless and the poor people in Olympia. And how you can keep yourself educated about that is you can go to the Heritage Bank Annex, Friday, March 26th at 8 a.m., 201 Fifth Avenue, corner of Fifth and Water Street, downtown Olympia, and talk with Sergeant John Hutchings of the Olympia Police Department. Nicole Catcherside of CYS, Tim Langlin of the Union Gospel Mission, and Rosalinda Noriega of Partners in Prevention Education. And I think that it'll be pretty interesting. This is put on by the Olympia Downtown Association. And as many of you may know, or as many of you may not know, the city of Olympia is currently reevaluating. The city of Olympia, you know, the people in charge or whatever, are currently reevaluating their approach to homeless culture in Olympia. And this is very, very, very evident on a very visible level. If you talk to people who are involved with community youth services and Partners in Prevention Education, Eddie Hop, and the various other homeless outreach and at-risk youth outreach programs there are in town, which I encourage everyone to do if you would like to get involved with CYS or Eddie Hop or any organization like that, then call 352-1646 and ask. And I have a list. I don't have time to read off all the different numbers of the organizations now, but if you call and ask, then I can give you that information. But it is very visible to them that not only is there an influx of homeless people this year, but there's also been a change in attitudes towards homeless people among local business and law enforcement. And to talk about this is actually Nick says that he isn't sure that that is what's happening, but that it's a new attitude towards it. But other people I've talked to says that there is a new attitude towards it. And we'll talk about that a little after this. But here's Nick with, you know, what's going on with the homeless and everything in Olympia. It is Tuesday, March 16th. This is Dee from Air Olympia, and I'm here with Nick Swiatkowski, and he is a youth advocate at Community Youth Services here in Olympia, Washington. And I just wanted to ask him a few questions about the increase in homeless youth that the Olympia area has seen between 2009 and 2010, and how that has affected his job and the outreach services that CYS provides. And how has that affected CYS's role in the community?
That's a big question to answer. I don't know if I could do it justice. I can talk a little bit about, I work in a particular program called Street Outreach. There's many programs at CYS, but that's the one that I work in connection to. And as far as how it's affected us, it's hard to say. What I feel like is affecting us more is support that we have from the community or from grant money to be able to provide intervention and prevention services to the youth that are here in Olympia and homeless in the county. So although there has been an increase, at least the numbers have shown that there has been an increase in youth who are experiencing homelessness, I don't really sense that that's changed how we build relationships with youth or provide services, but it has definitely encouraged me to want to focus more on how the community is involved and how the government is involved, and how society at large is involved in supporting these youth, and myself and one other coworker for the entire county, that there's more of a communal approach to that. And that's more of the piece that I think is needed to help some of these folks.
Well, I know from talking with members of the community that the city of Olympia, as part of the comprehensive plan, is kind of revamping and reevaluating not everyone in the city of Olympia, but certain members of the community in Olympia and certain organizations in the city of Olympia are reevaluating their approach in regards to how they deal with the homeless in our community. And there's the Neighborhood Association is scheduling workshops with local businesses, trying to instruct them on how to treat the homeless and how to resolve the issue of homelessness in Olympia. And everybody's kind of brainstorming about what can be done to address this problem. And what are some of the more effective and some of the less effective methods that you've seen in Olympia of dealing with homelessness, be it on a day-to-day basis or on an organizational basis?
One large thing that guides the work that our program Street Outreach does is relationship building, and I would stress that that's a pretty key component in interacting with folks who are experiencing homelessness, and really taking the time to build relationship with people, and not necessarily looking at numbers, and also realizing to go back to the homeless census numbers, that behind every one of those numbers, that's a person connected to that number. So really taking the effort to really approach things from a down-to-earth level and talking to people and really working with them to try to get their needs met and supporting them in that way. I would say that that's something that would definitely be effective. And something that I feel like is not very effective is having sort of a stagnant attitude of thinking that the systemic and societal and cultural structures that are at play, that those aren't flexible and that those aren't malleable. If one adopts that attitude, then I personally feel that ultimately it'll social services and folks will just be doing intervention work and not really working to end the problems that we're seeking to curtail at the end of the day.
So a more personable, individuated response you find to be more effective than a sort of blanket organizational response that just relies on number crunching and sort of established policy?
I would agree with that, but I would also add that I feel like it's good to have both. It's good to have a personal relationship piece to advocating and supporting people, but also to look at things on a larger scale as well, on a macro level, on a systemic level, and really sort of having the relationship and individual based interactions inform the larger scale decisions. So I'm not necessarily advocating that there shouldn't be larger scale decisions, but that the initiation and the fuel for those decisions comes out of more of a individual person to person communal way where people are really trying to work to understand one another's needs, and also having also a piece of that is also steeped in social justice and anti-oppression and including a conversation about that and a dialogue about that to really see where folks as a collective how they define those words and how they want to use those words and work towards achieving those means.
Yeah, well, societal policies do seem to work best when the entities who create them do work to gain individual responses and to find out how the general public feel on an individual level, and then aren't afraid to. Yeah, that's a good point. You can't have one without the other. I think that government entities do need to address societal problems such as homelessness on a large scale and create sort of overarching governmental policies to deal with these problems. But in creating those policies, it is helpful if they look to the people who are being governed and try to find out how they feel about homelessness and various other issues, and then work what they find out about how the people feel about it into the policies that they create. And the city of Olympia seems to be sort of reevaluating its approach toward homelessness and homeless culture. I know that there was a meeting at CYS last Thursday in which certain members of the community addressed the homeless youth there and told them about how they're going to be going up the Woodland Trail and kicking people out of there, and they're going to be having a different approach toward the homeless youth in the city. And can you tell us anything about what was said at that meeting and how, in what ways you have noticed the city starting to take a different approach in dealing with the homeless?
Well, I don't know if the approach is any different. I am a little new to doing this work. So I'm not, as far as I know, it seems like clearing of camps and sweeping of and homeless camp encampments has been done on a fairly consistent basis. I'm not sure for how long, what the history is of that, but I know that it has happened in the past. With this particular clearing that is to happen, we that was talked a little bit about at CYS, and there were a number of youth who attended that meeting and expressed some of their sentiments about it. What I would, sort of out of CYS and just in my personal life, what I'm actually interested in doing in regards to that situation is trying to get some of the folks in the community together to talk about better ways to address that issue, regardless of property and things like that. There is a reality here of these are places where folks are living, and whether or not they have the right to live there, how they are to be transitioned, I feel like should be done in a respectful and communicative way. And I'd really like to sort of bring some people around the table to talk about that. People in the who are part of the neighborhood around Woodland Trail, people from City Council or the City of Olympia, folks who may be camping in that area or have camped, and youth of downtown Olympia, because I feel like if there isn't a meeting and there isn't talk about how this procedure can change, overall, I think it's not an effective way to changing what's happening. If folks are moving from these camps, sort of what I've know to happen is that they'll find another place to camp, and then whenever the next sweep happens, those sweeps happen. So it's just sort of a cycle that's not really getting anywhere. And it's also creating a lot of animosity between campers and folks in the community and folks in the city, and there is a general fracture and fragmentation between all these folks in the community who were part of the same community, but there isn't communication, and there aren't relationships that are happening to sort of reach a more consensus-based decision on what should happen in regard to this.
I feel like the most obvious question that people will be asking, that homeless people will be asking, that other people, you know, more fortunate people in the community will be asking is, well, where are the homeless people going to go? You know, we're going to push them out of the Woodland Trail. It's one of the only heavily wooded areas in downtown, which is, you know, has the most resources for homeless in this area. And so if they have to leave there, then where are they going to go? And for a lot of people, you know, when they think of the homeless, their common conceptualization of a homeless person is, you know, someone who maybe didn't do so well in their younger days, and then, you know, they just kind of kept slacking around, and now they're like 30 years old and they eat at Salvation Army every day and they're a wino and whatever. And so if that is the common idea of who a homeless person is, then it might be kind of easy for a lot of people in the community to say, well, I don't really care where they go. You know, they can go to Tacoma or Seattle or whatever. But the reality is that there was a 58% increase in the homeless population between 2008 and 2009. There was another 16% increase in the homeless population between 2009 and 2010. And if we look at the statistics, which were compiled by the Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction for the homeless student counts by district, the Olympia School District had a 129% increase in homeless students grades K through 12 between 2009 and 2010. So, you know, in regards to these statistics, the overwhelming reality and the thing that people have to deal with when they start thinking about what to do about this is that most of these homeless people who are going to be being pushed off the streets are not like, you know, like I like to say, Wino Ted or whatever. You know, they are kids. They're like kids ages 13 to 20. And I don't think a whole lot of people in the community will feel all right about just shrugging it off and saying, well, all these high school kids, I guess, will just have to go live on the streets of Seattle or Tacoma then, you know? And so if they're not going to feel okay about just shrugging it off and saying, well, whatever happens to them, then we're really all going to have to start coming together and figuring out some solutions to this problem that might exist outside of the realm of government and state influence. What do you think?
I agree with the last piece of bringing people together and really talking about what we can do as individuals in a community, how we can work together and talk to come up with some creative solutions that can meet people's needs, and whoever wants to come to the table for that, it's, you know, the more the merrier. And I definitely would advocate for that. And I can also keep you guys posted about meeting in particular in the upcoming future about the clearing of the Woodland Trail. And I'd really like to try to meet with some folks before that happens, because I feel like if that happens before people are able to kind of get around and talk about it, then I worry that it's just going to cause a greater rift between folks in the community, and that'll be a lost opportunity to create progress.
And anyone who would be interested in attending such a meeting, about, you know, attending a meeting in which we will discuss solutions for this problem, the problem of homelessness in Olympia, then they can certainly email airolympia@riseup.net. And although we don't have a meeting planned right now, if we get enough emails about it, then we will plan a meeting, you know, as soon as possible. Is there any contact information that any organizations or anything that you know of that people might want to contact to get involved in this?
At the moment there isn't. I could let you know my personal email, which is nswiatkowski1@gmail.com. And like I said, if an official meeting time community meeting happens, I will definitely let Koa know, and you guys can post it on your community board or announce it.
Yep. And you know, even though Nick from CYS was not prepared to say, and many people are not prepared to say, that the City of Olympia law enforcement and neighborhood association and business owners are taking a different approach toward the issue of homelessness in our community. Sometimes here on air, we do something called real talk, you know, and a lot of times when you're going around and you're looking at statistics and you're looking at official statements and such, you don't get a whole lot of real talk. And real talk is that the Woodland Trail has not been messed with in quite some time. At the same time as the Olympia City Planning Commissions are trying to build a city hall downtown, which has half as many facilities for female police officers, meaning showers and lockers and such, as it does for male police officers. That is half as many female shower facilities for female police officers as for male police officers in the new Olympia City Hall. They are meeting with local businesses about how to address the issue of homelessness in the community, and they are you know, having the city police come in and give instructions about how to treat the homelessness, and then they are going and kicking people out of the Woodland Trail because they want to bring a vibrant, they want to build a Lorita Passage downtown, you know, skyscraper $1 million condominium thing, and so that they can bring a vibrant economy, so that they can make Olympia feel more comfortable for capitalists who want to come in and spend a bunch of money everywhere. And one thing that makes capitalists uncomfortable is free stuff. And where you have a homeless culture, and let's face it, I mean, people in Olympia who aren't aware of this or who aren't prepared to say this, Olympia, it's not homelessness in Olympia. Olympia is one of the few towns in America that has, including San Francisco, you know, Eugene to some degree, Santa Cruz, Asheville, North Carolina, that has a homeless culture, meaning that homeless people move here because it's easy on them, because it's one of the better places to live if you're homeless, here in, like, Portland, you know? And so they're trying to do something about this, because where you have homeless culture, you have a lot of things for free. And where you have things being, you know, goods, food, clothing, all those sort of things being given out for free, capitalism don't feel comfortable there. So it's no surprise that in order to make Olympia more comfortable and safe feeling for people who would want to contribute to a vibrant economy, no matter how green it may be, they are going to be kicking out homeless people from the Woodland Trail, being all kinds of crazy like that. And so, yeah, they're having a new approach towards homeless people. And if you want proof of that, don't ask me. Don't ask anyone except the freaking homeless people that you see downtown. When you walk downtown, go say, "Where's Uncle Mike at?" Go ask one of them, say, "Where's Uncle Mike?" And then go find Uncle Mike and say, "Uncle Mike, are they having a different approach toward homeless people?" And he'll say, "Well, you know they're clearing out the Woodland Trail." So there you have it. And Obama's bloody Afghanistan offensive. This is from the Workers Vanguard, published March 12th, 2010. Reformists beg imperialist war makers for peace. You know, there's a lot of issues going on right now in America. There's tons and tons of issues. We have the issue of homelessness. You know, what are we going to do to get money so we won't have any more homelessness? Or so we won't have to look at the homeless? What are we going to do to get money so that we can have medicine? What are we going to do to get money so that we can go to school and buy books and pay teachers to teach us stuff that we read in the books? Well, you know what the reason that there's no money for all of this stuff is? The reason that there's no money for all of this stuff is because all of that money is being spent on war. And the person that everybody devoted all their energy to and all of their everything else last year to, all their money, all of their time and thoughts and everything to getting this person elected so that they would do something about all the war, is now even topping Bush in the statistics. If there was a freaking, like, you know, if people collected sports cards for like warlords, the way that they collect sports cards for point guards and quarterbacks and such, freaking Obama cards would be more valuable than Bush cards now, because he's even ranking. He's got rank over Bush in that club right now. Having announced late last year that he was ratcheting up the number of U.S. troops in Afghanistan to nearly 100,000, President Barack Obama last month launched the largest military operation since the U.S. and NATO forces invaded that country in 2001. On February 13th, thousands of troops attacked rural Marja in Taliban-controlled southern Afghanistan. This was the first stage of a wider military offensive aimed at seizing control of Kandahar, the country's second-largest city. Parallel with Obama's surge in Afghanistan, the White House is expanding the CIA's program of using unmanned drone aircraft to launch missile attacks against Taliban fighters in Pakistan, where the government, under U.S. pressure, has launched offensives against Taliban forces in the northwest region bordering Afghanistan. Already, in the first year of Obama's administration, the U.S. carried out more drone strikes in Pakistan than in the previous 3 years under Bush. I guess these drone things are going to be pretty, you know, useful when they can't trick people into going to war anymore. They can just fire the drones over there. 700 Pakistanis were killed in these attacks last year alone. Meanwhile, the Pentagon reportedly plans to reinforce the more than 100 U.S. Special Operations Forces currently in Pakistan. The U.S. military is also stepping up operations in the strategically important Horn of Africa and Gulf of Aden region, along with escalating drone attacks against suspected Al-Qaeda fighters in Yemen. I almost said suspended. In December, Obama approved a series of operations by U.S. commandos together with Yemeni troops that have killed scores of people. In Somalia, the U.S. is reportedly providing training, funds, and logistical support for a planned offensive by what passes as the local government, backed up by African Union peacekeepers, against clan-based Islamic fundamentalist militias that control much of the country. The Obama administration has also expanded Bush's efforts to force Tehran to rein it in its nuclear program. Iran, which claims that it does not aim to develop nuclear weapons, is now subject to a barrage of UN and US sanctions. "We oppose these sanctions, which are acts of war," says the Vanguard. This article was published in the Workers Vanguard on March 12th, 2000. In Saudi Arabia last month, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton lectured Iran's rulers that they do not have a right to pursue nuclear weapons. In fact, given the threats by U.S. imperialists as well as their Israeli clients, it would be perfectly reasonable for Iran to pursue acquisition of nuclear weapons and adequate delivery systems to deter military attack. The article goes on to say that wars of conquest and occupation are integral to the capitalist imperialist system, as is demonstrated by the entire history of U.S. imperialism from the Philippines at the dawn of the 20th century to Iraq and Afghanistan today. Well, you know, everyone keeps on thinking that they can go and they can ask the capitalists and Uncle Sam for stuff, and he's gonna listen and pay attention to him, you know, in any further than it is to benefit his own self-interest. Because everyone went and you know, believed Barack They thought that Barack was a different person than George Bush. They thought they were going to get a new president, and he says, change. You know, if you he did, he says, I'm going to change stuff. And everybody thought that meant that he was going to change U.S. foreign policy. And then what does he do? He goes and sends freaking 30,000 more troops to Afghanistan, and he just starts even topping Bush in the warmonger stats, you know? So I think that this just goes to show that if there's going to be any kind of legitimate movement for health care or funding for higher education or anything else, if there's going to be any kind of legitimate movement like for humanism and humanitarian ethic and, you know, goodness in the world, then it's going to have to be an effort against war worldwide. Because why don't we have any money for higher education and healthcare? Well, because all the money is being spent on Obama's bloody Afghanistan offensive and the rest of capitalism's war on humanity and Mother Earth everywhere. But I mean, that's some intense stuff. I've got to calm down for just a second. But, you know, there's better things. It's the equinox. And Stray 122112 from Olympia knows what the equinox is all about. So everybody have a great afternoon. Have a great spring. And check out Stray 122112 along with Johnny Solo, Scrip, Dom P, and a bunch of other cats over at where is this show at? Over at the China Clipper on March 26th. That's the China Clipper, March 26th, Stray 122112 at 10 p.m. And this is what spring's all about, Serpent Spice. Your wizard tip is get free. Get free, kids. We'll see you tomorrow. Probably wouldn't want it if you had it anyway. Couldn't get enough, now it's harder to say. This is where I laughed and said cliche. Part of me died on that stormy day. Can't detect, follow steps, shape the test, break and fence, static crest, room for next. Take it all and make it blessed. Waiting for the answers in this hour of pride. Watching in denial as I say from a glide. Healing up the body, one soul and mind. Lady got me next. Seen anything quite like her skin, tight print, striped mint, I sent shivers up my spine. This had to be a crime. Serpents and spice with everything nice. I've never seen anything quite like her skin, tight print, striped mint, I sent shivers up my spine. This had to be a crime. I only want to love you, not make you mine. But under the covers, I'ma blow your mind. Rub you down slowly and make you shine. No sleep tonight, gonna cross the line. All good things must come to an end. Detach from within and shed the skin. Talk is cheap and it makes me smile. Actions are real but it takes a while. Maybe watch the sky and skip the trial. Driven down the aisle, I'ma rip the sidle. Survival of the fitness fits in denial. Corrupt and alone, we sit in a pile. Serpents and spice with everything nice. I've never seen anything quite like her skin. Tight print, striped mint, I sent shivers up my spine. This had to be a crime. Serpents and spice with everything nice. I've never seen anything quite like her skin. Tight print, striped mint, I sent shivers up my spine. This had to be a crime.